Welcome. It is the Nerdist Podcast number 632. Starting off year five, Katie. Matt Myra's walking in.
Come on in, Matt.
Hey, buddy.
I'm about to tell people that this episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Seven Son, starring Jeff Bridges,
who's
coming back on the podcast.
Goodness.
Very excited about that.
I know. He's great. What do you think we're going to talk? Well,
guys, I don't know anything about Jeff Bridges.
You haven't
because
met
I've
yet.
Never met him because I've not been to those two podcasts.
You're going to be at this one though, right? The next one.
When is it?
Here.
It's here. Yeah, it's Thursday. On a Thursday.
I kind of work in a factory right now.
Yeah, but I run that factory, and you can come be on the Jeff Bridges podcast.
Well, then I can't wait to talk to him about guitars and stuff.
Seven Sons in theaters February 6th. It was directed by Sergei Bodrov. Seven Son takes place in a time of enchantments when legends and magic collide. The sole remaining warrior of a mystical order, Jeff Bridges, travels to find a prophesied hero with incredible powers. The Seventh Son, a.k.a. Ben Barnes. In theater, February 6th, Seventh Son. This is the...
February 6th, get it on Friday, everybody. Go watch it.
Do you have anything to plug?
We'll be in San Francisco.
Oh, right.
And then on the weekend, if you happen to be running around in Vegas, I'll be running around in Vegas as well. Not performing, unless you count the roulette table.
You're just plugging your appearance.
Plugging my vacation. My future brother-in-law's, what do you call it?
Future brother-in-law?
Oh, you know, maybe.
What?
Eventually.
Look at this guy over
anyway,
here.
Anyway, yeah.
I mean, that's adorable.
Michael's 35, and I
you
said,
mean your future brother-in-law, Brandon?
Let's go to Vegas, and I planned the trip, and then Chris scheduled a show on the Friday I was supposed to be leaving.
Sketchfest gave us a date, and that was the date, and, so we gotta be there.
But yeah, other than that, nothing to plug. Listen to Phoebe, listen to James Bonding, watch At Midnight, regularly scheduled time.
I know, I'm doing a bunch of shows at Sketchfest. I'm doing the tribute to Weird Al, I'm doing the Nerdist Podcast, I'm doing, two other shows that I can't say.
But you're doing a bunch.
Yeah. So I'll be there all weekend, February 7th and 8th, and then continuing on the Fun Comfortable Tour, funcomfortabletour.com. There's some dates in February, March, April, May, June.
Oh, hey, May 1st, come see Fun Comfortable.
Oh, yeah, you're going to be opening for me in Boston.
There you go.
At the Wilba.
Yep.
We got to get there on a cheat day so you can get over to Anna's Taqueria.
They finally started following me on Twitter. Anna's Boston.
I know. That was a big milestone.
Really happy about that, guys. They're opening another one over by Mount Ida College. If anyone's local, they'll enjoy it.
Anna's Taqueria.
In Boston.
Yeah.
It's greatest, good? Mexican
greatest burritos I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah. Anna's Taqueria. Taqueria.
If I ever go there, I'll have it.
Taqueria. Oh, Taqueria.
They should use this for their radio jingles.
I'll clip it and send it to them. I didn't mean to do that. This episode is Paul Williams returning with Tracy Jackson, co-author of the book Gratitude and Trust, Six Affirmations That Will Change Your Life. Paul was on the podcast a few years ago. Turned out to be an amazing, one of our more like holy shit kind of podcast, because Paul is just a ball of light. I love that guy. I was a fan of his my entire life, and then the first episode we were floored by him, and then so we came back on last year, floored again. We played a song, and he's so much about positivity and being grateful for what you have in life, and people always feel good when he's on. So he just wrote this book with Tracy Jackson, and so we came back on again, and he was fantastic again here.
And Blaine Kapach got to meet him today on the lot.
And Blaine, I saw his tweet about
he
it.
Was,
Blaine was so away.
So excited.
It was adorable. So we're going to get to the Nerdist Podcast.
Hang on, let me just real quickly quote Blaine. He
sure.
said, it was like meeting the Love Boat.
Hilarious. I love Blaine Kapach. This episode is brought to you by Stamps.com as well. Stamps.com, use your own computer, use your own printer, buy and print out official U.S. postage on any letter or package, and you hand it to your mail carrier. And it's just that easy. Over 500,000 small businesses are already using Stamps.com. Right now, of course, you can use the promo code Nerdist to get this special offer. No risk trial. $110 bonus, including a digital scale and up to $55 of free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist.
If you're one of these dumb hipsters who loves analog scales, get over it.
That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. Here's the episode number 632 with Paul Williams and Tracy Jackson.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
And he was, somebody was online like telling him how much they love smoking the band, and they were doing like all these like, and then he didn't get TSA, and he was like, and I got TSA, and I like zooped.
Well, you assume
like, and then he says, can you believe it, I am standing in line talking about Smokey and the Bandit, and they make me take off my shoes. Just because you're in a really crappy movie does not entitle you to have not to go through security like
you know, Paul, though, if you're saying the word Smokey and Bandit in line at an airport,
that's our TSA.
First of all, that is one of the best movies of the 70s, Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, thank God somebody with a taste came in the room. Where do you want us?
I think, yeah, you can sit better in here. This is good. I have seen that. I saw that movie so many times.
Did you actually look at any of that yet?
I have not read it yet.
Yeah, okay, I didn't think so.
I love you, though.
Get that confession out of the way right away.
Let me just confess. You know, I find my struggle, like one of the things that I struggle with now is...
Time.
Is finding time, you know, because when you start making stuff and you're making stuff and you're making stuff, a year will go by and you're like, I don't know if I actually stopped to consume anything. Yeah. You know, I was like... I was churning out so much stuff that I didn't actually go, oh, I think I need to refill and put some stuff back in.
She has a teenage daughter, so she knows about music. I'm president of ASCAP. I don't know shit about music, you know. You know, because
please, on the ASCAP page, just under your headshot, under the structure, just say,
doesn't know shit. Listening to the picture says, listening to the Harmonicats. You know.
Blah, 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 blee, 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 whatever.
Dub what?
Blah, blah. Yeah, so let's... Yeah, so we should put all this on the air. This is always fun.
I know, this is your third time back on the podcast.
How many of us... Is that like a lot for the podcast?
There's a small club of three-peaters.
Yeah. Yeah. Soon it'll be you, yeah. Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges next week, yeah.
The dude.
The dude himself.
Oh, love the dude. Yeah. You used to live next to the dude, didn't you?
I did not live next to the dude.
Oh, well, you should get on that, because he's really cool.
I mean, I live in the same town as the dude, and I've met the dude, but I never lived next door to the dude. But you live next door to the dude.
Did I? And I haven't been dropping...
We have the same publisher as the dude. Wow. That's our probably one of
Yeah, we have the same
right
publisher
now.
As the dude. That's
we
true.
We do have the same publisher.
My connection to the dude is I wrote the title. Well, see, we should be talking about all this on the air. This
is on the air.
Thank
we
you. Use it all up
air.
Here.
What did you write?
We're on the air right now?
I wrote, what would they say if we up and... wait a minute. No. If I knew the way, I'd go back home. End of Thunderbolt and Lightfoot.
Oh, you wrote that.
I wrote that. You know that song?
I remember that, and I remember
sing
that movie.
It, because when you sing my songs, my world lights up.
No, stop it.
Have him sing the theme from Smokey and the Bandit.
Eastbound and down, 18-wheeler trucking. We gonna do what they say can't be done. We got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
Come on, Fred, get in the car.
Come on, Fred.
I'm impressed. Okay.
I'm a and huge Jerry Reed fan, too.
Yeah, he was great.
That guy. Did he pass away?
I don't know.
Rod McEwen died.
I hope not.
He
I
did?
Don't think
he
Rod
did.
McEwen died yesterday. Just if you were wondering and you were worried,
well,
and you were listening to the warm, just in case.
Didn't he produce? Oh no, that was William McEwen. I'm sorry, the guy who produced all of Steve Martin's albums was a McEwen.
No, Rod McEwen was like the listen to the warm puppy poet.
All right,
you don't care.
Let's take a moment. I do care.
I know, yeah.
But this guy,
Stanion Street and Other Sorrows, buy it now.
You don't
when
that.
You go in, that was the name of his book, one of his books of poetry.
Listen
Stanley
to the
Street.
Warm.
Listen to the warm, exactly. But goodbye, Papa. It's time to go. Evidently, that was really tasteless.
He wrote that?
Oh, yeah, he did. That was maybe the most tasteless thing I've ever done.
So much for gratitude and trust.
Not at all. Not at all. We all gotta go.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
We might as well,
exactly. You know, our tickets have been punched. We just don't know when.
Yeah.
Unless we have a return ticket. Maybe we have a round trip. You do
well,
not know.
I think it's a return ticket as well, because I think
I wonder if you're going to have TSA pre-check.
On the return.
No, I'll have to pay for the Rod McEwen joke on the one next time.
Just lost your TSA pre-check. You know, so I will. To heaven.
He'll just be waiting
all
on the
cats,
other side. Like,
all cats will hate me when I come
every
back.
Every single cat. But the last time you were on, and we sang I'm Gonna Go Back There Someday, which is, you know, one of my favorite songs off the Muppet Movie soundtrack. Like, I thought people were going to tell me that I was sappy and like, and how dare you try to sing Paul's song with it? But everyone thought it was such a, like, they were really sweet about it and supportive.
So not that I want to hit you with a was I right, but was I right? That was the real one. That was real. And you do a really good Dave Gonzo. This looked familiar. It was, you know, do a little Dave.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of down in here a little bit.
Exactly. He's a landlocked bird.
He is.
Yeah, and we're all landlocked birds. That was the heart of the last Nerdist, you know. Now we're here with Tracy Jackson,
but
the alpha.
But Paul talked about you the last time he was on.
What did he say?
Quite a bit. He said you were writing a book.
Did he tell you that?
He did.
He lied.
And here it is.
Oh, yeah. We did write a book.
It's not
Shit,
a lie
I
at
forgot.
All because I have proof in the physical universe.
Yeah, that's right.
And
we did
and
write a
one
book.
One of these days you'll actually read it, maybe.
That's okay.
I will. I actually will read it because this is the kind of book that I would read. You Gratitude like and Trust, Six Affirmations That Will Change Your Life. Because I find that when I get focused too much on putting out fires and not enough on stopping to appreciate things and being thankful for the present, which is the mantra of the podcast. We say, enjoy a burrito, enjoy the present.
Stay here.
And I forget it constantly. And I have to stop myself and go, hey, things are good. This is, you know, it's not a big deal.
We should do
three
t-shirts.
Deep breaths and live in the moment.
T-shirts that say, stay here.
Stay here. That's kind of ripping off Ram Dass.
Stay here.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Stay here. Stay here in your heart.
I like stay here.
Yeah. Like stay here. Yeah.
So when did you guys start writing this book?
We started writing this book 2 years ago. We started thinking about this book 2 years ago. We started our website 2 years ago. We wrote the book in a year. The book's been out 6 months. We've been doing this for 2 years.
Yeah. And so what made you guys come together to decide to write this?
We had a fabulous beginning to the friendship. You should tell them.
No,
about
you like
that
part of it. I'll tell the other part of the story. You can tell that because you love the bedroom part.
Yeah, okay. We met in Robert
part,
Mitchum's bedroom in 1981, maybe 82, in Robert Mitchum's bedroom. And I was getting high with Robert Mitchum. And Tracy, this really sweet little girl, walked in. She was maybe 20 at the time and said, I really like your music. And I said, I hope it gets you laid. And
the most, so much for teenage idols.
Is that the first affirmation?
First time it ever. That's the first affirmation. Do whatever gets you laid. It was the rude. I mean, it's rude. It's sexist. It's rude. It's shallow. It's arrogant. It's you know, misogynistic. It's all those lovely things that you hope that by the end of your life you are no longer exhibit in your behavior. But that's so she spun on her heels and walked out of the room a big Neil Diamond fan.
Song Sun Blue.
You know, like, but then I met her in 2001. She and her husband came to see me perform with Jimmy Webb at Feinstein's, and we met. And she'd had a great friend in recovery. The original title of the book was "Recovery Is Not Just for Addicts."
Right.
The fact is that there are principles there that we can all use to put our lives shiny side up. So she met me again, and I wasn't quite as bad as I was before. So we became friends.
That's nice.
We did, but we were friends a long time before we were. I'm looking for this picture to show you of us on Robert Mitchum's bed.
Is it you turning around?
There it is.
Where is it? No, it's 129. I'm about to get
it. So you didn't meet her husband and go, I guess it got you laid. High fives, everyone.
Hey,
come on, guys.
Exactly, huh? Yeah.
Look at us. The Chubsters.
We were Porky.
Pictures.
Porky McWilliams.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, that was Robert Mitchum's bed?
That was Robert Mitchum's bed.
Yeah. They took that jacket and made 6 for Andy Gibb out of mine.
I thought that was Andy Gibb's jacket.
Yeah, you know,
stretched.
Andy was tiny.
I'm tiny, I know.
What stories could Robert Mitchum's bed tell?
Ooh. Maybe not that one.
Not with Dorothy.
Not with Dorothy.
Not with the sheriff
in
the room. His wife was called the sheriff, and she kept
it. Could be some hotels that have some great stories.
Yeah,
I don't think that bed had any great stories.
She kept everything. Everything in order except that you could do drugs on his bed.
You know, because she was in the other room talking to your mother, I think.
You guys snuck outside and did drugs like little boys.
What did you do? What did you do growing up?
What did I do growing up?
Yeah.
You mean like in the process of growing up,
what
did I do?
What brought you to Robert Mitchum's house to a bedroom?
Oh, to a bedroom to see Paul Williams? I lived in Santa Barbara, and I knew the Mitchums. The Mitchums, there were 3 celebrities at that time in Santa Barbara. Well, there was Paul who lived behind his gate and never came out because he was high all the time.
Yeah.
And there was Jonathan Winters who every day stood in front of the grocery store and entertained people because he had nothing else to do.
Wouldn't he would just shout at cars as Moff Rickert?
He'd actually do full routines when he first moved there, everybody was really excited because it was, you know, you'd go up to the market and there's Jonathan Winters and you'd get a free show. We'd go on like hour, he just wanted to perform, he had nothing to do. Then after he'd been there like 5 years, 3 years, 4 years, people would like see him and they'd like park around the back. Yeah. Because, you know, like, you're like, I've got 20 minutes. I don't have time for his entire third season, you know?
Right, right.
And then we had Robert Mitchum, and then we had Steve Martin on the Hill who never came down, and we had Paul. And when Paul came to town, I was really excited because I was a big Paul Williams fan when I was a girl. The only time I ever hit my grandmother was at a Paul Williams concert at the Universal Amphitheater. I have it on tape because most people shouldn't hit their grandparents. And so I was very excited. Parents, yes. Grandparents, no. Yeah. But I was very excited to meet Paul because I'd loved his music as a girl. And then he said, you know, I hope to get you laid. And I could handle that. I mean, I'd been laid by then. But I just didn't want to hear it from Paul. You know, I wanted him to say, do rainy days and Mondays get you down?
Right.
You know, that's all I wanted. It's raining. Are you down?
Yeah.
But he didn't say that. So anyway, but now we're
I was
going to
get to that. I was starting
book.
With going down, and then we were going to back our way in.
Now, if he had said it in like a cute song, like "I hope it gets you laid, we're here on Robert Mitchum's bed,"
I would have liked it had he written a song. And then about 15 years later, I was writing TV and had a deal at Sony, and they said, what do you want to write? And I said, let's do a TV show for Paul Williams. And they said, as long as you back up the cocaine truck. So that was a no. That was a no from upstairs.
You know, we do have reputations we're unaware of sometimes, and mine wasn't exactly the one
I ended up with Alex Rocco. Anyway, so because he didn't do drugs. But yeah. So anyway, now we are joined together for life in gratitude and trust.
Tracy was a screenwriter for years and years in Hollywood. She wrote Confessions of a Shopaholic and The Guru and stuff. Yeah. And she's been a regular customer at the Deity Deli for years. She's been a Buddhist and a Hindu and a church religious science practitioner and right down the line and all. But there's when we started talking about my life and the way to change and recovery and the principles. She lit up, and she heard me say it at a thing after a screening that's still alive. I said, my choo-choo runs on the twin rails of gratitude and trust. That, you know, those are the two elements. And she said, there's a book there. You know,
I've also always had recovery envy. That's always – I was one of those people who never did drugs. Like, you know, in Reefer Madness and those films when they say if one person stays away, we've done our job.
Yeah.
That was me.
That you, yeah. you
I was like,
justify their job.
I justified the entire film.
So that everyone else could do it.
Absolutely. I went, Gateway, no, I'm out of here. Absolutely not. So I were the complete yin and yang. I never did drugs. I can have one glass of wine. And
turned it down from really famous drunks, too. Okay.
Like, you love that. You love that I turned it down from Hunter Thompson.
Yeah, she turned down drugs. I mean, that almost makes me cry. I mean, because, you know, I don't ever want to get high again beyond just the high of clear vision and the clarity that comes with the sober lifestyle that I've embraced. But every now and then I hear of an opportunity that's by me.
Damn it, back then, that would have been amazing.
Wouldn't you love to dive into an evening with Hunter Thompson? Just once back then?
You know, I have a weak constitution. I don't know if I would have survived it.
I couldn't even be in the room much longer. I was getting such a contact high.
Yeah.
Like 3 hours, and I was like,
yeah. It's like hugging Willie Nelson. You have to change your date. You know?
It's true. So that was that. So anyway, so I'd always been envious of people in recovery because I love the principles by which they live. And that's.
I said the worst of us. We were always the worst before, because like your friend, the friend that you dedicated the book to, you said that he was terrible before
he got sober.
You're like me, you know.
Right.
So I wasn't the only one who was terrible.
No,
before
I knew
he
a lot of
sober.
Terrible people
Chris,
who got good.
Yeah,
a lot of terrible people who totally turned their lives around. So we figured if it works for them, why can't it work for people who just have normal everyday
problems? Well, this is a really interesting concept. And it says on the cover of the book, this amazing book is a revolutionary concept, Recovery for the Non-Addict.
But we're all addicts. I mean, our theory is we really are all addicted. And what we say a lot of times is, has anyone out there ever said, this is my last?
Right.
Like, we've all said, this is my last something. You know what I mean? And so...
Or I'm obsessed with, or
something, right? You know, so even now phones. More people are obsessed with their phones than ever before, right? Everyone's got phone addiction.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
we all grab our phones.
Exactly.
Baby.
No, Siri. No, I'll buy another one.
Siri. Oh, Chris has got the big one.
Yes. Siri. Oh my God.
Paul's in love with Siri.
Siri, call Chris Hardwick.
This is what a day with Paul, she's ignoring me.
Paul can
literally, Paul will say, Siri, how far is the soundstage from here? I go, Paul, it's right. 2 feet, Paul. Paul literally, I don't know. I was thinking about that. What did you do?
I have a meaningful relationship. Well, because Siri allows me to be the alpha infant that I love to be. You know, I'm the alpha infant.
Let me ask her a question.
Reassure me.
Siri, why are there so many songs about rainbows?
Yeah.
Come on, Siri.
We're not the only one. See, oh, that's right.
Most people just ask her what she looks like.
She's very temperamental sometimes.
I've not had a lot of luck with her lately.
You know what I feel like? I feel like trying to get information out of Siri is like trying to get someone's dog to do a trick. They're like, he was doing it before.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, play dead. And the dog just looks at you, not interested in...
The camera, red light goes out, the dog
not interested
does.
In your human affairs.
Yeah, yeah.
I never talk to her, but... You talk to her for both of us.
I do. And I use places that I know how to get to, I still use the maps.
He asked her. Yeah. What was it yesterday? It was something you knew so well. How do you get to Benedict Canyon? Paul, you've lived in L.A. for 50 years. You know how to get to Benedict Canyon.
Yeah, but there's a lot of Maybeville in my life, you know. Like,
how to get to Benedict Canyon.
The way I remember things is not the way they actually
are. Well,
I got
to stop at Carrie Fisher's house because she's got some drugs. Yeah. And I got to go over to...
The
version of Star Maps.
That's right.
If you look at this puppy, you're going to recognize something in the affirmations that I think has a general kind of a comforting feeling for all of us who have followed a certain path. The first one is something needs to change, and it's probably me, Siri. I want you to say that and treat me differently. No,
something
needs to change,
really weird,
and it's probably me.
There's a good song in there.
There is. Oh,
something
yeah, yeah.
needs to change, and it's probably me.
Well, there's a good life in there. You know, I mean, my life, you know, got shiny side up when I made some major changes.
Sure.
But I have to continue that work. I have to continue that process.
So what's the basic premise of recovery for non-addicts? Like, how do you pitch it to someone? You're at a party, and someone's like, what do you do? And you're like, well, I do a lot of things, but I wrote a book. And then you got to tell them.
How do you pitch the concept to non-addicts?
Yeah.
We do that all the time. It's pretty easy. You know, what's wrong with your life? What would you ask them so they would like glom onto the concept? Or how would you just say what we're doing?
Because when people hear, if someone hears the word recovery or they hear the word addict, no matter what the context, they're like, oh, well, that's not. I mean,
no,
I don't
know. Which is why it's actually not on the cover. That was the original title, was Recovery is Not Just for Addicts.
Recovery is Not Just for
Addicts. And marketing felt that people would, you know, Aunt Minnie would go, I'm not buying a book on recovery and I'm not buying a book on addicts. I'm not a recovery. I don't need recovery and I'm not an addict. So you're absolutely right. People are repelled by that concept. So this is six affirmations that will change your life. Subtextually, recovery is not just for addicts.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's got a problem, anyone whose life's not working out okay. I mean, the basic tenets or the principles are something needs to change and it's probably me, which we can all do. And even if – and some people say, well, it's not my problem. It's my husband. He's a jerk, or my mother-in-law. You go, you know, maybe it's not your problem. Maybe they are bad. But how you respond to them, that's on your side.
Well,
and that's really, you know, how you respond to the world. Like, I love that thing. What's your thing about not how the world – what's that thing you say? Not how's the world treating you?
Yeah, how you – how you're treating the world today is just the first guy that I worked with when I got sober, he'd call me and say, hey, Paulie, how you doing? How you treating the world today? And the first time he did that, I was like, oh, you've had a minor slip of the tongue there, don't you mean? How's the world treating me? He said, I don't give a rat's ass how the world's treating you. He said, well, I do because I love you. But he said, I can't really do anything about that, but I'll make you a promise. If you're vigilant about the way you treat the world, if you walk into this world with kindness and attentiveness to the people around you, everything in your life will get better. And he did not lie. That was almost 25 years ago, and everything got better.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting that most, I mean, you know, with obvious exceptions, there are some things that we can't control. But I think if someone were to do a deep dive of their life, and I've had to do this, it never ends. I got to do it all the time. But when things aren't going the way that you think you want them to go, when you really start dissecting it, you start kind of seeing a lot of the responsibility emanating. Like it's yours.
Because
I remember when I, a couple years before I got sober, and this isn't just a drunk thing, this is a people thing because it still happens. But this is the example that I remember. But I just remember like people are being really weird. And I'm not working as much, and people are being this, and people are being that, and people are being blah, blah, blah. And then after I got sober afterwards, I would talk to those people, and they would go, yeah, you were so, like, you know, like, obnoxious and loud. Like, we just didn't want to be around you. And I'm like, I didn't even see, you know, because I lacked the perspective.
I lacked
the introspect. Honestly, I'm not even sure it's introspection. I think it's not so much looking inward, but being able to see yourself from outside yourself. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, introspection, I think, is, you know, what do I want? How am I doing? What am I this? But being able to see yourself, you know, like it's more like an exo introspection.
It's also how am I affecting people? I mean, I think so often that we don't look at how we're affecting other people. I mean, I've learned this with my kids. Like, they just want to be like, well, with kids, they just want to be listened to. And half the time, one of our affirmations is I will learn from my mistakes and not defend them. I, for one, have spent most of my life being defensive. And I think so many of us are defensive. And so our immediate go-to position is defense.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think that that repels people, you know, because we're already defending. If you grew up in certain environments or you have certain habits, you defend yourself a lot. And I think and out of defensiveness, for me, came snarkiness, rudeness. I'd cut people off before they'd cut me off. I had a whole series. I mean, I'd been drinking, but I was a complete bitch half the time. So I understand that, you know, now I'm like Miss Sweet, right? I'm not snarky anymore.
Most of the time, I'm
most
thinking.
Of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I can still go back. But you land a bitch, but
But the fact is that you know, one of the things you talk about is you say, I'm not as funny now, but you are as funny now. The
I'm
fact
not as
is,
mean
but
funny.
You're not as mean funny
I
at all.
I miss that.
And that whole...
I like the mean funny girl. Well, where
yeah.
is she?
Yeah, she'll be back. She'll be back. Once in a while, she'll poke her little head out and go, whatever, you know. But what you're talking about is I think is fear-based activity. It's
yes.
like as soon as if I look back and you know I got to watch my inventory. I watched an inventory. I watched a documentary about myself with some footage of me behaving really really badly. You
right.
know, Paul Williams Still Alive. There's a scene with me on the Merv Griffin Show when I'm just an arrogant little asshole. I mean, it's just it's hard for me to watch that and all. But what I also see at this point, and what I think all of us see, is that so much of it's fear based. As soon as I get hit with that, and I talked about it with you earlier on the Paul Williams Returns,
yes.
the Nerdist, about the fact that when I'm insecure, I get noisy and loud and kind of try to be glib and whatever and all, and authenticity goes flying out the window. You know what we get when we will take that break, when we take that beat. Somebody says something to us that kind of shoves us back instead of going, hey, fuck you, and back, I'm back at
right.
them. But take that beat and kind of get up above the whole thing and go, what's going on with them as well? Something better comes out of us, you know?
Well, I think it's hard, you know, sometimes we lack the perspective to see how we're coming off, and we, you know, because the way that we communicate is a learned set of skills. And, you know, people seem very surprised, or, you know, you can be very surprised if you say something to someone and they go, hey, that was really sharp or mean. And you're like, what are you talking about? All I was saying was, you know, do this or this or this. Because you don't realize, you know, you just sort of have a set of defaults. And so you can go, even though what you mean is almost pointless, you know. It's how are you communicating that? So it's like, can you find better ways to communicate? If people could just gain the awareness of how they communicate to begin with and try to figure out more... You know, just better ways to communicate what they mean, as to, you know, adding the kind of defensive, crusty outer shell.
It's a trend. I think and one of the things I always loved about recovery is taking a daily inventory, looking at your life. And we have one of our affirmations is, I just forgot the effort. I just had a senior moment.
Life on a daily
still
basis,
Alice, you know? Still Tracy. Yeah. What's that?
Examine my life on a, you know, like I will make right the wrongs I've done wherever possible. And after that, I'll examine my life on a daily basis.
Yeah, so.
You know, which is.
Which
you
if
know,
you do that every day and you sort of get in bed at night and go, okay, how did that go today? Well, how was I in these situations, in those situations? And was I the person I wanted to be? I mean, I'm learning to stop myself in the moment and back up and say I'm sorry right then, as opposed to dragging it around. How many things do we drag around that we wished we hadn't said, wish we hadn't done, but we don't really go back and apologize to people? Or we just—I mean, I call it being an emotional Sherpa. You know, we carry all this stuff.
I love that. You just have to say that again.
Wow, an emotional Sherpa.
Are we not emotional Sherpas?
We should be.
It's too brilliant to race by. It's too,
oh, thank
too good.
You very much.
You're
Maybe
welcome.
You could write a song about it.
That was
it.
Really nice today. At
You're very
point.
Sweet.
Thank
yes,
you.
That was very nice. But so. If you do look at yourself every day and you do look at how other people might be looking at you every day, I think that that does make a huge difference. So I can – even now if I get really pissed off, let's say, with the people at JetBlue because they're not answering the phone and then they finally answer the phone 4 hours later, I don't snap and bite their head off. I go, I know you don't run the company. I know it's not your fault. I've been waiting. I'm a little – I mean, I'm nicer about being school mormish, I would say, and telling people how to live their lives. But – I think that looking at yourself every day helps. I do. And I think when the people I know in recovery look at themselves on a constant basis, they look at their behavior on a constant basis. They're constantly reassessing how they're going forward. And most people don't do that. Most people just go on autopilot and they go. And then they make all sorts of, you know, chaos in their wake. And then they go back and they go,
I did that? Why is he, like you said, why is he pissed off? Why is she pissed off? Why aren't I getting hired anymore? Why, you know, I mean,
but
it's
a lot of
like,
people don't even ask the questions. Like, they just go, which I think is a good first step, is to start asking, you know, why did this happen? Is there something I did? And, you know, because if you ask yourself that question, you'll probably go, oh, it's because of, you know, X or Y, as opposed to that guy was a shithead. That person, this thing, that, you know, just like constantly
pointing
fingers.
I know that voice.
Fingers.
Wait a minute.
Pass the buck of your life. And it's just, you know, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And I think once you do it, then people really do want to be around you. Thank you for the wonderful,
such a lovely,
generous partner.
I think that one of the things that is really important in what we've written is the word probably in the first affirmation. Something needs to change, and it's probably me. That probably is willingness. That probably is that little bit of wiggle room what you're just talking about, like where you actually stop and take a look and you go, wait a minute, let's examine this behavior. Maybe I shouldn't have been screaming, get that walker out of the way, I'm going to a meeting. You know, maybe I need to be a little different person. Probably is a huge part of that little affirmation. That I think allows the willingness to learn about who you are in the moment.
Well, and never yell at anybody on a walker would be the second part of
what's
that.
Don't punch your grandmother. That's right. You know, what's
get
ironic?
That walker out of my way. Aren't you? Going
until
to church,
you,
God
until
damn
it's
it.
Your walker, William.
Want to be late.
What's ironic is that, you know, people want so many things in their lives, and they get frustrated when they don't have those things. But most people don't stop and say, hey, if I focused on making myself a better person, I might, as a result, get the things that I want. You know, like, that's not why you should do it. You should want to be a better person because you'll feel more aligned and happy, and people around you will be happier. But you will get a lot of those things that you want if you work on, you know, making yourself a better person every day. And by the way, again, I'm not saying I'm great at it. Yeah. I'm just saying,
well,
I'm just saying something.
The natural approach is, Lord, lead me where you need me. Let me be a loving, sweet person in an Alfa RA, in an Audi R8. Is you start outlining.
Let me be happy flying private.
Let me be the Pali Lama, you know, but always the front of the airplane. And please, if possible, a G5 in my future.
Please. Because they're real sweet.
But also, if you're grateful for what you have, and I do think this is true, if you are grateful for what you have and you do show gratitude, I found this because I want less.
Gratitude.
I want less the more I give. And I do, and that I think is really, I think that works. I just, for some reason, the more you give, the less you want.
Well, I don't think that's crazy, though. That makes a lot of sense because ultimately people want more things as a tool. Like, they think it's going to be a tool that's going to fill some hole that they have. But if you're giving something and people are getting something from that, then you will feel satisfied by that. I think it's a difference between, you know, it's the difference between eating a healthy meal and then gorging on fast food. You know, like, the fast food is temporary and it'll fill you up. You'll feel bad afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I still want a new phone and stuff, but it's
bridge mix. Life is about bridge
you
mix.
You want bridge mix? That you want more bridge mix
bridge
in your life?
Bridge mix in my life.
You want more bridge mix?
Exactly. I want to build bridges to great relationships, and I want to eat bridge mix. A little of this, a little of that.
What is bridge mix?
Bridge mix is the,
bridge
one
mix?
Of the best.
Does it have Czech cereal in it and pretzels?
No. Bridge mix is just a great, it's the oldest name in chocolate in this country, which is what? C's chocolate. No. Talk to me. Where does the oldest name? See, it's Pauline.
What are you talking about?
My mind is falling apart.
Chris, I think he had a stroke.
Oh, no.
I think he's stroking.
Call 911. No, it's C. It's C's chocolate.
Call 119.
It's bridge mix. It's call 119. Exactly. It's bridge mix by C's, and it's the best chocolate.
Pauline, bridge mix is that stuff that has like cereal.
No, that's not bridge mix.
What's bridge mix? Oh,
that's
Chex
Mix? Yeah, exactly. I will learn from my mistakes and not defend
them. I'm glad you guys didn't write a book about bridge mix.
I will learn from my mistakes and not defend them.
It's true, because you can't have it. You can't
just
have it without
the
Chex.
Just in case this slips by, I want to make sure that we did clarify this. In this case, Pauly, who everybody was making fun of, was actually right.
Okay. We just want no one to send an email. Paul did not have a stroke.
Once in a while.
And I was making a plug for Chex cereal. I just wanted to get in a product endorsement.
Because Chex cereal, that Chex Mix is like.
It paid me before I got here.
This is what an amazing way to make. Incidentally, we bring you greetings.
That was
from,
worth the 10 grand, huh?
From Norm Pattis, Pattis of Podcast One, because yesterday we had a. Can we make an announcement? We are about to undertake this. We're about to step into this nasty world that you rule now.
You know, it's the podcasting thing, from what I can tell by your dynamic, will basically just be no different than your lives, just you'll be recording it. Like, that's it. That's it.
And we'll have
what
a good,
well, how fun is that?
We're
that's
so
amazing.
Excited.
Okay, is it going to be Gratitude and Trust? Is that going to be the name of the podcast?
It's Gratitude, it's Gratitude and Trust, yeah. But it's going to be, you know, funny ways to fix your life.
You'll come on?
Of course I will.
Oh, great. Oh, we're so happy.
Of course. Exactly. Are you kidding?
Our ratings just went up.
We did. Now we just, yeah, we're going to get so, we got so many more downloads and we're not even up yet.
I don't think you have ratings.
When is that coming out? When is that coming
out? Well, we just, like in a couple months.
Good.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about that. Well, because we love doing this. I mean, I would rather do this all day than do something else.
Yeah.
And you don't really want to write because you get like, you know,
the great thing about
this
is I can be stupid and not rhyme.
Yeah, and you don't have to write. You don't have to look at me and say, Paul wants to have lunch usually around 11 and we get to the office at 10. So this
will be good. She'd write for 10 hours. I write for 3 and I'm kind of, and I start playing with my iPhone and go, Siri,
wow, I just got 2,000 more Twitter followers while you were writing those pages. That's all.
Are you working on any music stuff right now?
I'm doing a musical version of Pan's Labyrinth.
Are you serious?
Gustavo Santaolalla, Guillermo del Toro, Jeremy Unger, and I. Gustavo and I are writing the songs. Guillermo's amazing movie as an adult.
Has that been announced yet?
Yeah.
It's kind of snuck out there, yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
that's
a little
amazing.
Bit. That's, yeah, that's very cool.
Holy crap.
And I'm playing
works,
some
that
dates.
Really
now,
well.
When is this going to air? When is this first time this one's out?
Goes up Monday.
March 6th. Awesome. Can I do that? March 6th.
Plug.
I'll be with the Jacksonville Symphony. And March 28th, I'll be in Chandler, Arizona. So everybody should come out and say hey. And I'll
hope that Jacksonville
meantime,
Symphony
we'll,
gets
see, that's
made.
What we'll do a lot of, Tracy,
what?
On
what,
the podcast.
Pushing your symphony
going.
Dates?
This week. Well, because Chris does it, you know.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah.
I know. We have stuff. I mean,
Have you guys done, have you guys do like a live panel together? Like
no, we
live?
Do a lot. We do public speaking.
Okay, good.
We do public speaking, and we do teaching things, and we're doing a big seminar.
You're doing a big seminar.
It's not for a while, but June 24th, 92nd Street Wine, full day seminar on all types of addiction that we're producing.
Yeah.
With our friend Jeff Ken Pulver, 140 Conference, which goes out live on Twitter to like a million people. So we're really
Pulver
excited about
cool,
that.
Yeah. It's a great venue, too. 92nd Street Y is a great venue.
Yeah, so it'll be, you know, all day long.
And
so
we're doing Omega in June.
We're teaching at Omega.
It's like a three-day seminar on Omega where we're going to share the wisdom of the Pali Lama and the alpha author, Tracy Jackson.
We do. And what else do we do? We have meetups now. We're starting meetups all over the country through Meetup so people can get together and have actual support type groups using the work and we have a lot of stuff. We sell jewelry. We have a lot of stuff.
Oh,
I handle
God,
that.
Don't even mention the jewelry.
The jewelry is such
then
a pain in the ass
for like 200. Start every conversation with, well, with this we have a problem with delivery on such jewelry. We're selling
necklaces.
Recovery and brightened
lifestyles. I deal with women who aren't happy with their necklaces. It's like all day. It's like I'm like in Morocco and there's some woman and she says and I get this nasty email that the ingratitude, right? It's right here somewhere.
Right here.
It says tit. It went gratitude. She didn't think that was really grateful. You know?
I want that
wasn't
one,
really spiritual.
I would trade this one for the tit one.
You want the tit one. I deal with stuff like this all day.
Says
one
gratitude,
woman yesterday,
and that's
I'm sending
boring.
It back
I
because I have arthritis.
The, tit one.
The woman yesterday sent one back. She has arthritis. She can't work the lock. This is pretty much what my life is like.
That's
like,
all right, though, because...
I'm grateful, Chris. I'm grateful, yeah.
Is the program... spiritually agnostic. I mean, it's all types of
whatever you want. Yeah. You can believe in Jesus Christ. You can believe in your Dalmatian.
The second affirmation is I don't know how to do this, but something inside me does.
And
it's
care.
Just, I think we're more powerful than we recognize. I think that we are more capable. You try to remember a name, you can't remember the name. You're washing the dishes 20 minutes later and it pops into your head. That entire little committee was up there going through old wadded up pieces of paper
and
old envelopes.
Why do you always think that's God?
I just love
that.
Well,
I know
that's,
you always say it to everyone and I never get it.
Well, here's what it illustrates. It illustrates inner power, and I don't think our power is outside us. I think our power, we access our power through our hearts, through our souls, through our mind, whatever. Somehow this magical thing that we have no idea how it's wired somehow wanders. It just is a big, big active navigator in my life.
You don't think those are neurons?
Yeah. What did you say? Say it again.
I said, you don't think those are neurons?
She's being sciencey. Yeah.
She is being sciencey. Well, you know,
I mean, I believe in spirit, but I think those are neurons.
Yeah, but the fact is, if you look at quantum theory, you'll find that there is no evidence of anything being there, but there is proof that it was there. So if you look at the subatomic particles, you'll find that there is. Yeah.
Subatomic. All right, a big word. Come on, Chris. You got to use like a five-syllable scientific word now to one up him.
Well, you know, I guess it's the Paul Williams uncertainty principle. That, yeah.
The Paul Williams uncertainty principle. I love that. You know,
yeah, it's like as life has seen in the world, in the center of Maybeville. It is true, Maybeville, to live your life in a place where you're not sure you've been there before, but you're headed back for sure.
I mean, it's interesting that people can.
That makes no sense.
What
does
did you just
it doesn't
say?
Matter. I don't know. I was
those
just.
Really,
I was,
those were neurons.
Say a bunch of shit like that and put it on a bumper sticker.
Exactly.
That's right.
We'll
they love it. They'll love
but
it.
But I think, you know.
Isn't that what Yoda did? You know.
He is.
Yeah.
Yoda. Wait, but he just rearranged the
word
exactly.
order. Yeah,
exactly.
Chris Hardwick on Nerdist and possibly not right now. Maybe will be someday.
We'll be together. I-R-U-R. But the idea that, you know, people are kind of battered around by, you know, they kind of get battered around by life a little bit, so they create defenses, and they kind of, the more and more they get scared, or, you know, because it's like, you know, we're trying to avoid pain, seek pleasure, but I think, you know, we want to avoid pain more than we want to.
We want to avoid pain, and we do it from fear. I mean, but, it's like a bad combo.
So people kind of live their lives, and they, you know, like, I kind of think of it like, you know, you have a paintbrush, and you're painting a room, and you got to paint the floor. And something happens, and you swipe a little color over there, and a little more, and a little more, and a little more, and pretty soon you're painted in this corner, and then you feel trapped. You go, "Well, I'm trapped." And you're like, "No, it's just you could just walk through it. There's still a whole house left."
Right.
Because in your mind, you think, "No, this is all there is," as opposed to, "There's a whole house of that I could still go explore. All I got to do is just walk through the paint. Not going to be a great experience, but once I walk through it, then I'm free." You know. So it's just basically. Whatever limitations people think they have were created by their fear and avoidance
it's
of pain.
And a lot of it's in their head. It's not that people don't have stuff, but a lot of it is in their head. And you know, Paul's wife has a great phrase called two ifs and a maybe. That we all live in this kind of two if and a maybe. Like, this is, you know, if this happens, maybe I will, right? Yeah. And a lot of us live in that place. And a lot of people live in that place, and that's where everything that happens to them starts. They process it from there. They don't really are you like it's sort of like are you processing it from the real place it is? Are you processing it from the fear place it is?
Right.
And that's, I think, what, you know, what we do a lot of. I think we do a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I think that's I think the other thing that I find with people that, you know, we now a lot of people come to us with their problems and we listen. I think a lot of people think their problem is one thing. Like, what's wrong with their life is one thing, and it's really something entirely different. Yeah, I think people have a very hard time identifying the headwaters of whatever's going wrong in their life.
Yeah,
and that's hopefully what we help people do. But that's a big deal.
I've made her an honorary drunk. I mean, she's really...
She really works with... I love being with drunks.
We were at BFC with Betty Ford, and, you know, they just added us at Hazel into their library, which we're thrilled about and all. But, you know, like, Tracy's all of a sudden working with... I mean, she's working with a guy who's sober 51 years, and they're... You know, and she's working with him. I mean, it's like, just makes enough to piss me off.
Well, it's hard to see, you know, like if you're driving in your car and everyone's looking at, and you can't figure out what the hell's going on. And then it's like, oh, well, you're dragging a giant branch under your car, but you don't see it because you're inside. We don't always have the perspective to see what other people can see, you know, so I guess that's why it's good to maybe be inquisitive and ask people, and, you know, like, sincerely, and also be able to handle
criticism,
whatever they tell you. Yeah, criticism. I think
constructive criticism.
Constructive. I think most people are bad at giving criticism because I think criticism is this general word that most people have equated with, I'm going to say whatever the fuck I want to say to you, and you're going to shut up and take it. You know, like, it's sharp.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, your shirt's dumb. Well, why that hurt my feelings? Oh, you can't take criticism. Well, no, there's just a shitty way to say it, you know? Like, there are ways, and again, it goes back to learning how to communicate better. Like, and I think that people can do that by asking the question, what is my goal in this situation? And is my goal to seek understanding, or is my goal to lash out at someone because I'm frustrated and I just want to blow off steam?
I don't know.
What don't you know?
I don't know. I'm just back at the. I'm still with the tree caught underneath the car. I want you to pull over so we can get it out.
That's right.
I mean, I'm just. I keep hearing that sound. You know.
I mean, I think that people, like, if people criticism is a weird word, but I think when people tell you, like, when people would tell you, people, I think a lot of times that people tell you, even if it's for your better, the betterment of your life, who you really are. Like, when, let's say, when Kaz told you that, you know, you were a drunk.
I fired him.
I mean, yeah. A lot of times if people tell you something about yourself, your first response is, they're not my friend anymore. I don't want to, I mean, a lot of people only want yes people around.
Right.
Or people who go along with their program. So I think that when someone really cares enough about you, you go, well, you know, maybe have you looked at your behavior? You know, maybe are you pissing me? Is it coming from you? You know, maybe, you know, say you big jerk, you know, you're, you don't have to like tear into you and rip you an asshole.
No, all my friends tell me the truth, right, Jonah?
Sure thing, Chris, all the time.
Yeah, see what I mean?
So you just say,
nothing but tell him the truth all the time.
Yeah.
That he's perfect.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, I would tell him if he wasn't doing anything perfect.
See?
Only if.
Right there. Wait, what do you mean? Are you even suggesting that I might not do something perfectly?
No. I said there's just it's such a crazy idea to even think
such a thing.
With
this type of social barometer, how can
friend.
I go wrong?
You can't. That is a
Keep
friend
on
all
keeping
the way.
On, Chris Hardwick.
That's a good laugh.
And I don't know why you picked on Paulie's shirt.
Yeah,
he only wears it every other day.
At least it's buttoned right for a change.
You know, I specifically pointed past you at Kyle. I didn't want you to feel the.
We got the check thing
got the,
today.
You know?
The check
brothers. The check brothers.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, Chris Caswell has been my music director since the mid-70s. And in like the late 80s, he said to me, you know, what, I'm really worried about you because, you know, this whole drug thing has really gotten out of control and I'm worried about you. And I said, you're fired. I mean, just on the spot, I fired him. I mean, as soon as I got sober, I went running out and made amends and hired him back. You know, but it was like that was my response to.
Well,
to,
he obviously cared about you. You're lucky that he.
Absolutely.
That he came back.
I mean, that's what a, you know. Again, if you're willing to reflect the truth back to somebody, if you're willing to take that chance, you're giving them information that can help them put their lives back together.
So, what do you say to someone who says? Because I'm sure you've encountered this before. Where you go, you know, just be thankful for the things you have, and people go, "I have nothing to be thankful for. My life is terrible." My significant other left me. My cat died. My parents won't speak to me.
There's a lot of times when life really does suck for a lot of people, and it's easy for all of us sitting here on this lot to like. We have a lot to be grateful for, all of us. And people, some people don't have as much to be grateful for, God knows, as others. But you think of those guys. I don't know why I'm like going to this place and totally free associating the guys who lose their legs in Iraq, and then they go and they climb Mount Kilimanjaro. It's like the people who find some inner core. When you see people with one leg ski, when you see people who fight back, it's just. I think that people give up easily, and I think that there is a lot to not be happy about in a lot of people's lives and in the world. Look at the world right now. I mean, you could look at just the world and go, whoa, what's happening, you know? But I call it grasping for gratitude straws, and there's some days you just have to go, I'm happy that I'm breathing. I'm happy that I can look forward. You know, sometimes it's baby steps. It's like when people get sober, right? It's a day at a time. My life may suck today, but if I do these couple of things, maybe tomorrow will be incrementally better. And I think if they look at life in little tiny chunks and not look at life like, I don't have, you know, I don't have a great job. I don't have a great car. I don't, you know, there's so much celebrity worship. There's so much, you know, projection. If you just look at what you have and how you can make it better and keep your goals within your reach and you make little steps, it's like losing weight. People go, okay, I'm fat. Now I haven't lost 20 pounds in a week, so I'm going to give up and I'm going to go eat a lot. So you lose like half a pound a day, like, you know, at the end of 6 months, you start to, I think people bite off more than they can chew, really. And I think that then they get discouraged and then they can't move forward.
Well, it's, you know, because we're impatient. We want instant
now.
Change. And I think, you know.
And change doesn't happen that way.
No, and I also think that, you know, because of the attention spans that we've developed, because of so much information that we
it's
have
like,
to process,
it's like zero
between, you know, internet, phone, TV, you know, like everything that we have to process all at once, work, kids, that, you know, people just want instant gratification because most of the things in our world will instantly gratify us, or we seek things that will instantly gratify us. So if we can't be gratified in an instant, it's like, well, this is ruined. Like, no, it's not ruined. Yeah. You know, like, just don't
give up. People really give up. People hear no, and that's it.
But the incremental thing is so important. If you could do one small thing every day, one small thing, if you're not doing anything now, if you could do one small thing once a week over time, it would amount to something. I mean, you know, just
it's like cleaning your house. You know, you don't have to clean the whole thing at once, right? If people are hoarders and really sloppy, but you clean one room, you clean one drawer, then tomorrow you clean another. You know, it's all incremental. And I think that that's one thing in recovery that I love. It was a day at a time, and then people are grateful every day for the day they had before, and they attack the next day.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the messages that we try and put through in this book, that you're not going to fix your life in 5 minutes. Nobody is. You're not going to fix yourself. And every day you refix it. I mean, I screw up every day still. I mean, you screw up, yeah, you know, probably every, what, 20, 30 minutes? What would you say? But,
you know, I think something else that adds to this is also, you know, is to not let these emotions build up and build up and build up. But, you know, you talk about the little steps and all, feeling things along the way. You know, so many people, we medicate, and the slightest bit of sadness, the slight bit of a little bit of grief or whatever. Certainly for me, when I was majorly into cocaine and alcohol, I was medicating those feelings all along the way. When you get the poison out of your life and you're living life on life's terms, there are going to be moments in your life that are sad. But again, I go back to your emotional Sherpa phrase. I love that because it reminds me that if I'm faced with some sadness along the way, if I pause and feel it and go, you know what? Yeah, you know, I mean, I got into a thing with my son the other day on the phone. I looked at it closely, and it was his fault, it was my fault, whatever, but it made me sad. And to just experience that and go, you know what, this makes me sad because I want a great relationship with my kid. And I was so gone when he was a little boy and trying to put that together now and all. But to experience that and feel it, and then on the other side of it, being able to go forward and not go forward in anger or defensive, but just let myself feel it, you know.
And that's Buddhism, really. I mean, just to feel life is sad. And if you feel it, I mean, it's why I like to meditate.
I got to go now.
You're crying. And it's like Paul's songs, it's all sad. But if you do feel it, I think the bad, and I know from raising kids, the other day my daughter was mad at me, and she was mad at me for, you know, like stuff that I did 20 years ago, 12 years ago. So I turned, and we've been fighting, and I've been putting it off, and I've been defending myself, and I just took my phone, and kids want to be listened to. And what I've learned from my kids is all people just want their feelings to be validated. And even if you just say, I understand that it sucks, I understand you're upset, what can you do to make it better? You give them that moment of saying, oh, you don't have anything to be upset about. Look at you. You've got your legs. You've got a car. Whatever, right?
Right.
We always would brush it off. But maybe it really is bad for them. So if you just – it's like what shrinks do. How does it make you feel? And then they validate your feelings. I think that we don't validate other people's feelings. And I think when you do, they can also then release them and work with them and understand them. I just let my daughter attack me the other day. I just put my phone on speaker. I was driving to Santa Barbara. So you have an hour and a half.
From L.A. to Santa Barbara, she let her daughter attack.
And then we went on like 2 more hours. And she just, like, everything that I'd ever done in the last 23 years that she remembered, which was pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And she just did it. And I went, and I didn't defend any of it. I just took it all. And usually I'm like, I'm not a bad mom. I'm not a bad mom. I'm not a bad mom. I just went, okay, maybe I'm a bad mom. Okay. By the end of it, she was like, she couldn't have, it totally erased all of it. It was a weird thing, but just letting her without defending. And I went, I have no defense. I just love you. I just want to be a good mom. And how do we move forward? That was sort of the end of it. And I thought, wow, that was something I'd never actually let her do. Just attack me without me defending myself.
Well, that's hard to let someone do because we have egos and hurt feelings and we don't want someone else to be sad and we don't want to be the cause that they're sad. And also, selfishly, we don't want to have to face the fact that, you know, maybe we weren't perfect all the time. So,
but once you do it, you go, I'm not perfect, you're not perfect, none of us are perfect. And I think parents with kids, I think that's a big problem when raising kids, is there's always this, you know, kids get, you know, parents aren't perfect, and it's hard for kids to accept that.
Jonah, she just said none of us are perfect, but...
No, but you just said...
Chris.
I said besides Chris.
No, that's it.
Slip of the tongue,
you won't be invited back. I can tell you that right now.
We're all, but that's true. I forgot. Sorry, so sorry, Chris.
Did that help, though?
Yeah, totally. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's a good exercise if you can handle it. If you can handle not being defensive, it's a good exercise just to tell. But, you know, of course, the downside is...
Get a rope. I'm going to hang myself.
Because you don't know. Like, you don't know what someone's going to come at you with. And then it might be like, oh, I thought I was prepared for this, but this hurts way worse than I thought it would.
Yeah. I think that it didn't hurt as much as her being mad at me and me. You know, it's just... Do you have kids?
No.
No. Well, it's like a real trip, isn't it? Would you say?
Kids? I don't know. I missed the first 15 years of their life. No, actually, it's an amazing gift.
You learn more from kids than anything else.
I have amazing kids.
How old are your kids?
My son is going to be 34 this year, and my daughter is 31. They're going to be 31.
Okay.
She's marrying her partner this year.
Really?
It's very cool. Very, very cool. They are totally happy and wonderful, wonderful. They're both social workers, you know, so they're going to be rolling in dough before the year's out.
Buying that G5 for you, huh?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We got to put a cap on these fat cat social workers.
Yeah. That's right.
Take them down a peg.
That's right.
Yeah.
Knock them down the financial ladder.
Yeah. My son was an actor. He got totally into being a physical trainer. He loves that. He has a bunch of clients he's working with. He's designing a gym for a hotel chain or a whole program for a hotel chain. You know, he's the one who said to me when we were first starting to work on the book, and I used the affirmations around my eating habits. habits and all. But my son looked at me at two and a half years ago and went, Dad, you're starting to look like a cookie jar, you know. And I was 30 pounds heavier, and I lost it, kept it off.
Shit, yeah, because you run.
Every morning.
Yeah.
2 miles. Two miles. You know, she's making fun of me. No, I run 3 miles an hour up and down and 2 miles an hour forward. You know,
so. He looks like a pogo stick when he runs.
But your people, actually walk by me while I'm running.
You know, people on walkers.
I'm talking about, oh, yeah.
Get out of the way.
You're right. We'll
goddamn
have,
kids.
Oh my Too God. Slow.
Yeah, damn them.
So what just... can you sort of lay out quickly, in broad strokes, what the six affirmations are so that people will get an idea and then pick up the book?
Paula, you want to start?
Yeah, first of all, something needs to change and it's probably me.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do this, but something inside me does.
I will learn from my mistakes and not defend them. Yes. I will examine my life on a daily... I'll make right the wrongs I've done. I will make right the wrongs I've done wherever possible.
I will examine my life on a daily basis.
And I will live my life in love and service, gratitude and trust.
Nice. Oh, the last one ends with the premise.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's like a good song. You hit
that's the thing. It's like
you hit the title at the end of the chorus.
You just...
Exactly. You know, I brought a little something to the process. Just a little something to the process.
You brought a lot, Pauly Lama.
Well, I hope...
Pauly Lama.
I hope that... and it is the website... Is it Gratitude and Trust?
www.gratitudeandtrust.com. Yeah.
And your podcast?
At I am Paul Williams, at Gratitude Trust, at Tracy Jackson 4.
Is our Twitter. And
Tracy with an EY.
Tracy with an EY. And, wow. And soon our podcasts on Podcast One. So,
well, I think that's great because people, you know, especially if you're having a tough time getting yourself out of yourself, it's that I love that line from the Yes song where they go, don't surround yourself with yourself.
Yeah, I love that.
You know,
that
if people have a difficult time doing that, then having something like a podcast where people are just talking about gratitude and trust, like even that can distract someone enough to get them past the cloud of their own problems and egos.
I think the thing is unique about the book too, Chris, is the fact that we wrote the text, you know, in one voice where we go through the, you know, the whole story and all. But we tell our individual stories and we go into our own boxes and that's pretty. There's some pretty funny stuff in there.
Yeah, we totally out ourselves on everything.
What I remember was pretty bizarre, so I wrote it down. And likewise,
yeah,
Tracy.
It's not like that's the other thing about the book. It's not like we're like the almighties that know everything. We talk about all our problems in there. We completely come clean about what's wrong with us. So people don't feel like
we're not psychiatrists.
A lot of self-help books are really preachy, and it's like, I know everything, and you're an asshole. You know, we don't say that. We're just like, we're screwed up as anybody else. We're just working on it every day, too, and sort of come along for the ride. I think that's a lot of what we do. And we help. You know,
great response. And we got, as you pointed out, we got a great, you know, if you're a big Anne Lamott fan, we got the greatest quote from Anne Lamott about the book.
Oprah loved us.
It's so kind and all. So, you know, we have a lot to be grateful for.
We do.
Tracy Jackson and Paul Williams.
We are.
Well, it's always good to see you. You know, you have an open invitation. Just keep coming back on the podcast.
I'm gonna go get my sleeping bag and I'll be back. You know?
Please.
Well, and I also love that you mentioned the last time we were out, you talked about ASCAP and the work I do for ASCAP and music creators' rights. You know, you're a you know, if you can't take advantage of your friends, what's the point of keeping them around? But you were very, very cool to all us at ASCAP.
The fact that I could sing one of my favorite songs with you is like that was the highest form of payment I could have ever received for anything.
It was why I was there that day. It was so that could happen because that was a heart payment for me, and I think for you it was meaningful as well.
Well, and I thought there was an interesting message too because a lot of frustration comes from trying to control outcomes, and when you the times where you just sort of go, whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah.
Not only is that less stressful because shit's going to happen anyway, no matter what you do, but it also frees you up to see the possibilities and constructive possibilities of what you could do with a situation as opposed to pouting because, like, well, I wanted this and this and this. What if this other thing is way better? You didn't even consider that possibility because you don't know
what do I always say?
We both say it. Thank you very much.
No is a gift.
And we ask people, and we will do that on our podcast too. We'll do it on your podcast. It's like, what was the time in your life when there was something you really, really wanted and there was a no? and something so much better came along.
It was the podcast. Yeah. That's why I started the podcast. We just talked about it. We just had our fifth anniversary podcast. And,
happy anniversary.
Talked about it because I was up for a job that I didn't get, so I got really mad about it, and then started a podcast, and then this turned out to be infinitely
so much better than anything.
Yeah.
And it happens in everyone's life all the time. So we always like to say, what's the no that you just thought was, you know, the person that you thought if they left you, and then if that relationship had worked out, you would have never had the relationship that really was better. You know, I mean, there's so many no's that we don't see because we're so controlling.
The word no really shows you the type of person that you are and the type of person you can become.
Yeah,
because
if
you hear no and you're like, all right,
I'm going to kill myself.
We should just switch it around and say on. No is actually on. You're on to something else, you know?
Sticker.
Write it down.
Bumper sticker. No, turn that no upside down and make it on.
Yes.
And get on with it. Turn that no upside down and get on with your life.
All right.
Why do you sound like little Enos when you say that?
That's right. You know, I'd like to kick his ass just once. Listen, y'all folks, I'm going to tell you right now. I want you people to keep listening to Nerdist. And when Gratitude and Trust podcast starts, then it's here. Chris Hardwick's going to come on over and talk to us as well. And we're going to do it in the nude. So I'll talk to you later.
You should go into Eastbound and Down from that, just that beginning banjo riff. And as we always say, enjoy your burrito, everyone. For real.
What a treat.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.